we find ourselves back at the University of Mainstay, the center for magical learning in the Human Fell. However, a strange occurrence has happened this night. On the eve of their examinations for moving to an upper class, Archibald Coldfinger, Belfast Highland, Yarrick Stoll, and Evie Barnsley have found themselves in the middle of some sort of plot. An attack upon the college itself as explosions and quakes rocked their dormitory. They fled immediate danger, only to find themselves face to face with these intruders, carrying the unconscious body of one of the college's masters. Now, these black-clad figures, this chitinous, shining armor upon their bodies, exchange quick looks, and then one of them points to the four of you and says in a raspy voice, in a language that, well, I'll let someone do a history check afterward if they want to try to identify it, but they say, Messina ur gosin, and then the two in the front rush you.
Can I cast Charm Person on the one that gave the order?
I think we have to roll initiative.
Oh no!
I think this has started. Remember, they're only like 15 feet ahead of you, so.
Yark got a rousing 6.
15 for Evie.
Belfast got 17.
Archibald got an 11.
Well, then it will go a player, the enemies, the three other players. Who's first?
Good old Archibald, who is still detached since he like just cast Locate Object, is going to take a quick step forward, and he's going to tap his cane on the ground, and he is going to verbally say, Grease! And a drop of grease formulates on the ground and then spreads outward in like a 10-foot puddle. And he will move back from the puddle of grease. And as a bonus action, he will say, Edgar, stand there, mentally indicating in between him and one of the charging attackers.
These two who rushed forward do begin their turn here in the grease puddle, and they're going to roll some dexterity saving throws. The first one is able to slip and slide, but keeps his balance. The second one takes a tumble and just face plants the ground. This first one, however, does rush forward toward Archibald and tries to grapple you, instead coming into contact with this unseen servant. As he lands this attack, Edgar dissipates, but you are still free of his grasp. The two in the back who are holding, who were holding Master Macundius, draw these short barbed blades from their hips and slowly advance. Both of them are able to move through the grease and now stand just on the edge of the puddle, their weapons poised. Who's next?
Evie can go. I would love it if she could.
Go for it.
Okay. Are all of these combatants who are moving against us in, like, within 20 feet of each other?
Yes.
Okay.
They're all right up on each other right now.
Okay, great. I'm going to cast Calm Emotions in a 20-foot radius sphere centered on all of them. So, not centered on them, but that encompasses all of them, but none of us. So if they could make a charisma saving throw for me, that would be grand.
Yes.
Oh, hang on. Before I do that, can I expend all of my things that I need to expend to detach?
Yes, you may. And so you gain that 1,000-yard stare for just a second, and then...
Yep.
As
Evie goes cross-eyed.
Your mental processes.
And then casts Calm Emotions. And she just says, relax.
I think it should have extra effects because of how chill Evie is.
11, 5, 15, and 9.
Okay, the 15 is the only one that succeeds. So everyone else is chillaxed.
All right. That would be the one that just grabbed at Edgar.
Perfect. So they are indifferent about us. That's what Calm Emotions does. I can make them indifferent towards like creatures of my choice. And so they just don't really care about our existence anymore.
How long does that last?
This will last a minute.
Just keep in mind then that if they see their friend being harmed, that will also end the spell.
And then Evie will say, hey, I just made all of them sort of like calm down a little bit. So if you could, you know, not attack them, that would be great.
Still being detached, Belfast all of a sudden just says, duplicate, and three other images of Belfast appear.
So, still holding this passed out girl in his arms, and not having detached previously, Yarrick is going to take this short moment of calm and begin to proceed back towards where they came, creating a larger distance between the oncomers and his group. Yarrick goes back about 30 feet, and he sets down the girl that he had been carrying.
She does seem to be stirring awake at this point.
Seeing that she's stirring slightly, is she enough awake that he could try to talk to her?
It would seem so, as she kind of...
Can you walk? The university is being attacked. We need to get out of here.
What? My leg.
Can you stand?
It hurts, but just help me up.
And Yarik will do so.
You're Yarik, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry to say that Eric, the one who was with you in that room, is dead.
She just kind of blinks in disbelief. Damn, that's... Yeah. What are you talking about?
It's crazy, I know. And he points down the hallway to where this, like, these people are just standing. We've bought ourselves a little bit of time, but we need to leave.
All right. Is there anything I can do?
Unless you have another way of slowing them down, I don't think so.
I could try.
Please.
Are you ceding your turn then? Is that it?
Yeah. I mean, he's already moved and done stuff, so we can't detach.
So then the girl, whose name is Cinna, by the way, which you don't know yet.
You don't know that.
She will move to the end of the initiative slot, and she, looking at the one that is still kind of in a fit in front of Archibald, she starts to mutter all these words associated with sleep and calm and rest. This is all happening pretty simultaneously. So as this figure attacks Edgar and, you know, dissipates that unseen servant, kind of stands there in shock and then looks up again toward Archibald and goes for another lunge, he just like kind of pauses in midair and then slumps to the ground and is out cold for 1 minute.
Evie will sort of like step around these guys who now no longer care about her and say, I'll be taking my teacher now, thank you. So she'll go to Master Mercundius and sort of pat his cheek to see if he'll wake up.
You actually have to move across the grease to do that.
Oh, is the grease coating the whole hallway?
It's a 10-foot square.
Yeah, it is in between.
Okay, that's
but
fine.
Being careful, you can have advantage going through.
Okay, 16.
Is that your spell cast, Noah?
Yeah, that beats it. It's 14's the number.
You pass over the grease and get to Master Mercundius. He startles.
We need to leave.
Oh, what do you mean leave? Whatever is the matter? What is going on here?
Well, we've sort of stopped this, you being kidnapped for a short period of time, but it's only going to last about a minute, so we need to leave. Can you get up, please?
Yes, some help, dear.
I'll just sort of, like, roughly pull him to his feet.
You roughly pull this old fellish man to his feet.
Oh, he's old? I didn't know he was old, okay.
Couldn't you tell from my voice?
I should have guessed. I thought maybe he was just dusty.
He is the bookkeeper.
Exactly.
No. I mean, he is old, so he could be dusty too.
Yeah, she'll still pull him up.
You help Master Mercundius to his feet, and you are taking him back across the grease. You will have disadvantage this time.
I don't know that I'm going to take him back across the grease. I'm going to look at my companions and say, which way do we want to go?
Would I know where the infirmary is?
In relation to this college, yes. In relation to where you are specifically, no. So you don't know your way out of this hallway or out of the college, but you do know where the infirmary is generally located. Like, just on the university campus.
Okay. Maybe it would be best if we head towards the infirmary.
Yeah, okay. Which way is that? I've got an old man here.
I don't necessarily care, but let's keep going the way they came. I doubt they'd turn back.
You yell from down the hall.
Yep. And Yarik is going to start hobbling along with this girl and walk past all the ambivalent standbyers and try to cross the grease.
Yarik has disadvantage. Archibald and Bell, if you try to go across the grease, you can have advantage from taking your... Well, actually, no. Y'all just roll normally because time is of the essence.
All right. Yarik got, with disadvantage, a 12 on his dexterity check. Does he faceplant?
If Cinna does, but she does not. So she's able to keep you up, though you're slowed.
All right. Archibald, who is quite used to slipping and sliding on the grease as he has done this in his free time before, with a roll of 17, he just kind of glides past. He's not even like moving his feet. He's just like surfing on the grease. Whizz, until he reaches the other side.
And Bell?
He got a 7.
So Bell slips and falls just as then Cinna and Yarik reach the other side. Archibald, Master Macundius, and Evie are 5 to 10 feet further toward the bend, and these figures kind of come to. You have maybe 5 or 10 seconds before they realize you're not in front of them anymore, and they turn around and find you, because they're kind of just like coming back to their senses, realizing that you exist.
Archibald, who is also at the edge of the grease, looks down and says, "Come, come now, Belfast, we must be on our way." And he reaches down and he helps him to his feet, slick as he is.
As Archibald helps Bell off the grease, would he be able to, like, detach and perform a spell in this amount of time?
Yes.
Great. Yarik's eyes close once more, and a slight, this time very imperceptible, humming sound escapes his lips. And then he turns, seeing the figures kind of trying to regain their senses, and he just reaches out his hand toward the end of the hallway opposite where they are and speaks clang. And a sound comes down from the end of the hallway opposite them as he casts prestidigitation, I believe. Can do sounds.
You could druid. I think you have druidcraft, not prestidigitation, but you can make the sound of a small animal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So then coming down from it is the tinging sound of what could be a bell or a hummingbird tinging on a window. You're not quite sure, but it's definitely audible.
I'm gonna roll some things for these blokes here. What's your spell save?
My spell save is 14.
All right. The four who were affected by the charm spell kind of start off in that direction, the one in the grease getting to their feet. However, the one that was hit by Cinna's sleep, as he comes to, he looks up, hears the sound, and then looks just directly behind him, right at the group of you as you are rounding the corner. And you hear him shout after you,
"Masinagan usungenai."
I think it's time to run, everybody.
Yep.
Evie was going to say, "Pick up the pace, Gramps," and just sort of like drag Master Macundius along.
Yep, Yarik is rolling.
All right, y'all are running at full speed. This is basically a chase. And so we're going to keep that same initiative order from before. And we're just going to add Macundius to the end here, along with Cinna. As you're bolting down this hallway, you make it 30 feet around this bend and down the hall before you see these figures come around as well. Now, you can decide a few different things here. If you'd like to attack, that's fine. Or you can try to use your different skills or spells to create diversions, distractions, impediments to their progress, or something to help speed you all along.
I got one thing. Can Yarik go again?
It's the top of the order.
So seeing that his tinging hummingbird on the window glass did not distract them sufficiently, Yarik runs this distance, and then seeing them round the corner, turns around once again, still detached, and says, "Entangle and ensnare." And he's going to cast Spike Growth, which is the ground in a 20-foot radius centered on a point, which he's placing directly in front of the frontmost one of them. It's going to have twists and sprouts, hard spikes and thorns. It's going to be difficult terrain, and then if they move into it, they're going to take 2d4 piercing damage for every 5 feet they travel.
Oh, okay, so you're not casting it like right on them, you're casting it in front of them?
Right in front of them, so like the front one would probably be like stepping into it as they're running.
All right, as you utter those words, you watch as the ground kind of splits, these cobbles and whatnot giving way to the natural dirt that may be deep underneath as these roots and thorns and spikes jut out and crawl over the surface. This group now being their turn, they skid to a halt right before this spike growth, and you hear another one shout,
"Messina, Messina,"
down at you.
Archibald, sensing that there must be something up with this situation, he is going to turn around and he's going to focus for a hot sec and say, comprehend. And he's going to cast Comprehend Languages.
Nice.
Because he wants to figure out what these guys are yelling at them.
What Messina means, unless that's just his name.
As you touch your own mind and take on a new understanding, you are able to interpret the literal meaning of any spoken language you hear from this point forward.
And that's all he does. Since he's been detached this whole time, he's, you know, he just keeps running.
Belfast is going to use Ray of Frost on the ground right in front of the spike growth, so it would impede them next when they get through the spike growth.
As this blue-white light streaks out onto the ground and flash freezes the air around these stones, kind of covering them with a layer of slick frost and ice.
He will end his detachment because he's been detached for a little bit and he knows that it can have lingering effects if he stays there.
All right, then. And then you'll move your speed?
Yes.
Ending your detachment, by the way, is a free action.
Cool.
Evie is going to pause briefly in her movement to sort of, she's going to cast Minor Illusion, but she's going to make it look like she's sort of slamming an iron gate closed over this hallway. So I want to cast an illusion of like a 5-foot gate behind us and then just run.
And this is accompanied by sound and movement. And
oh yeah, as convincing as she can make it.
Yeah, it's incredibly convincing as this gate crashes down behind you, some 30 feet away from these enemy soldiers. And then do you continue running after the others?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cinna will cast Minor Illusion as well, right as you go past a certain point, and definitely once this portcullis obscures the enemy's vision for a hot second, she makes it so the hallway has like a curve, that it bends off, and so that they'll assume that you ran down that corridor instead of just heading straight on. And finally, Master Macundius, who's just being pulled along by Evie, just looks at you all and he's like, "This is quite impressive displays. No wonder you were all in for selected advancement. We should get somewhere safe. Come, just a ways ahead, there are many halls and twisting turns within the archives and the libraries here where we can find shelter. Get a bit of repose from this episode." And with that, I think you are out of combat because between the thorns, the ice, the portcullis, and then this winding hallway, they do not pursue.
Do we hear anything being yelled in the hallway?
No.
Oh, poor comprehend languages.
You hear the faintest yells of fools and imbeciles, but you don't hear anything directed toward you.
Well, then, dusting himself off and taking a couple of breathers, Archibald will go ahead and end his detachment, which does not get rid of his comprehend languages. He looks around at everybody and says, "Well, that was quite a bit of excitement. Master Macundius, you don't happen to know the quickest way to the infirmary. I fear that could be a safe place, and at the very least, we ought to get some medical supplies for Cinna here. Her leg is quite badly wounded."
"I'm afraid not. I attempted to make my way out of the college myself just a time before, and I found that it had been blocked. Rather strategically. It was then that I moved back into the archives, fearing that someone would make some sort of attempt at one of our many artifacts or records here, and that's when I was beaten and apprehended by those individuals. I couldn't say who they were, or what they were speaking. It's slipping my mind. I'm sorry, I'm still a bit fuzzy from the entire encounter."
"Should we find somewhere to hide?"
"That would be best. Evie, you're quite versed in the archives and the library? Tell me, where do you believe the last place someone would look is?"
Evie, without missing a beat, says, "Nonfiction."
Macundius gives a chuckle, and he's like, "It's as good a place as any. Come,
there should be quite a few around here."
"Wait, there's fiction works here."
Ah, Yarrick, the boring one.
He's the nature boy.
As Evie and Macundius lead your group down these twisting hallways, you see offshoots that go into larger passages, most of them unlit, and other rooms set aside for study. I should say, actually, all of them unlit by firelight, that is. If there is light inside, it does seem to be of a magical nature brought on by some artificery or imbuement. With the just dustiness in the air, it's kind of stale here, and you make your way down a hallway into a much, much larger chamber. It seems to extend about 3 stories up, and it's just full of bookshelves, one after another, after another, after another, carrying scrolls and parchments. And Macundius turns to you all and he says, "Oh, it's not exactly nonfiction, but oh, histories will suffice."
Now that we are safe, Evie will end her detachment.
Mercundius gives a cough and then kind of feels his way through the dark toward the nearest table and chair arrangement and takes a heavy seat and lets out a long sigh and is like,
oh, by the ten truths, I couldn't quite say what exactly is happening, but unless it slipped your minds, dear pupils, I believe the university is under attack.
That was pretty obvious, yes.
Tell me, were these the first adversaries you came across? I did not see it, but I caught the scent of a fire as I tried to move out of the college.
I saw the fire. I also got shot at.
Shot at, my dear? By whatever do you mean?
I mean someone flung magical projectiles at my head and Eric's head and hit Eric's head and missed mine.
Eric Grin?
Yes.
Good gods. Oh, the poor boy.
And he kind of just takes a minute to process this, like running his hands through his frizzled hair.
Evie pats his shoulder, but there's no warmth in it at all.
It's just like...
it's very perfunctory.
Like, this is what people do, right?
While Evie is comforting this old man.
Quote, unquote.
Big quote, unquote. Yarick is going to see what he can do to tend to Cinna's wounds.
Her leg was pretty... The break was set by Belle, but there still seems to be some, you know, internal damage, and she still has a bit of a limp.
Then, as his last act before ending his detachment as well, Yarick is going to have what looked to be similar to the vines that spread across the floor earlier, but not as thorny, but rather covered with small leaves and kind of flowing down his arms, is going to have these wrap around her leg, and then they kind of sink in, healing her for 12 HP.
She kind of gives out a little gasp as this lichen and whatnot moves across her skin, and then as it sinks into her flesh, healing the rips and tears in her muscles beneath and giving her this, you know, soothing feeling, she kind of, you know, bends her leg at the knee and is just like kicking it, and she's like, wow, that's... Thank you.
That should help you to at least be able to move quicker as we get out of here, if we get out of here.
You should have some of that in your hair.
I do. And he kind of like, the ends of his hair just kind of wiggle.
Well, that is most intriguing. Now, I'm afraid that we are in quite a situation here with quite a great many questions that I would like answered. But unfortunately, it would appear that we currently do not have the answers nor the means of getting an answer. However, perhaps we can get one of those things. Master Mercundius, you said there are a great many artifacts in this wing of the university. Are there perhaps any scrying glasses?
I imagine there could be one or two, yes. What is it you require, then?
Well, most notably, a scrying glass. I think that would be very good in getting... I do believe it would be quite useful in obtaining more information, one, about our attackers, and two, about anybody else that may still be in the university, such as the other masters and perhaps the other students.
Yes, it would be good to get an idea of their general whereabouts. I fear that we are some of the only people in the college at this time. As you know, students are not permitted in the archives after dark. We might be alone for longer than I would wish. But yes, we should move out of this wing quickly then, and we can find where the artifacts are kept. A scrying glass would be with other valuables and such.
Master Mercundius, have you ever heard that language before?
It's on the tip of my tongue. It's something I heard long ago. It is an older tongue. I cannot place it right now. I'm sorry, my head is still spinning. My ears are ringing. I suffered.
Evie pats the side of his head.
Ah, no, child, it's quite all right. And he vigorously waves you away.
Did that help?
No, Evie, but thank you.
We could make tea.
Sereth, help us. Evie, why don't you make tea, and Archibald and I will set off toward the other end of this hall and see if we can't locate where the artifacts are stored.
Is that some sort of clever distraction because I'm annoying you?
Come, Archibald!
Very well, then I am off. Everyone else, behave yourselves. Yes, and also, please do not die. That would be most unfortunate.
Have fun, show off.
As Archibald and Mercundius, you know, shuffle off into the darkness, the four of you, Bell, Yarrick, Evie, and Cinna, are left alone at this table. There's a small lamp in the middle of the table that is, you know, magical in nature that you can, like, crank up, and it emits this sort of warm light. But as Cinna kind of plays with it, turning it on, turning it off, turning it on, turning it off, she looks at the rest of you and is like, perhaps it'd be better if we didn't reveal ourselves.
I think we are safest in the darkness.
So, Cinna, where were you hoping to be placed if the examinations had happened as usual?
Well, I quite favor thaumaturgy, to be frank, though I understand that it's connected to the Elementalism College.
That it is, which is what I was hoping for as well.
Master Gell had been quite impressed with my studies so far, and I did do a small dissertation on the movement of matter between living and unliving states.
So necromancy?
Well, no, not exactly. More like a tree going from alive and well, bark and such, to what you might find after thousands of years, a petrified version of itself. And, of course, the reverse.
Reverse plant necromancy. Understood.
Cinna narrows her eyes at Evie, and she's like, I guess that's a simple way of putting it. But
you'll have to excuse Evie. She sees things in a very pragmatic sort of way.
Well, her reputation precedes her.
I'm sure everybody at the university knows who Evie
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. She's a menace.
Oh, come on. She's not that bad.
Well, thank you, Belle.
Although she did try to make tea out of a goldfish earlier.
A what?
I technically was not allowed to try. I didn't really get a chance.
That does not mean you will not try in the future.
I desired to try to make tea out of a goldfish would be a more accurate report of those happenings.
Anyways, perhaps we can find something in here that would help us.
What, all these scrolls on histories? I doubt it.
Who knows? And Yarrick is just going to go and start flipping through scrolls.
Keep it down, Yarrick.
And he, like, pushes another scroll off to the side, and it makes a soft little crumbling sound.
Down a little ways away, as the banter of this group fades, Mercundius and Archibald are walking along. Archibald grabs one of these lanterns off the desk and turns it on, this one emitting a kind of cool bluish hue. And as he carries it, kind of just clinking by his side, looking back and forth at the different rows and shelves, Archibald, you notice that books and manuscripts are giving way to scrolls and parchments, and as you continue going along, eventually tablets of stone and metal.
It's like, it's almost like walking through time, isn't it? Tell me, Coldfinger, you don't spend too much time in the archives, do you?
No, unfortunately I do not. You see, I spend most of my time in the College of Scrying, trying to solve certain mysteries, yes. Such as the mystery of the missing pudding, yes, that one was quite a head-scratcher.
I am quite aware that Master Carso favors you.
It's that pudding mystery solution, that's what did it.
But, you know, the solutions to problems of the here and now are often found in the past. One might take the time to consider that.
Indeed, indeed. In fact, how would you suggest we go about solving the particular problem that we are facing now? Perhaps there are past enemies of the Arcanum.
The Arcanum, as long as it has stood, has had enemies, both among humans and without. It would be wise to begin searching old records, and with any hope, your friends have already set to it. You and I, on the other hand, are looking for a very specific item. We should continue with haste.
Indeed we should. I do believe a scrying glass would be most useful in providing answers to, well, what in the name of Vale is going on here?
Please, watch your tongue.
Excuse me, Professor, excuse me. I'm sorry. In, just with all the adrenaline, the heat of the moment, as it were, I'm afraid my manners are a bit lacking at the moment. Please do forgive me.
You are excused, young Coldfinger. Just the Master Valor is not one I'd like to really envision right now, going through these dark halls, as familiar as they are to me. Here, I do believe that we are on the cusp of the artifact halls. And on cue, you do come across the end of this chamber after walking for quite some time, going past row after row after row after row. You see ahead of you then, kind of laid out like a museum would be, different large archways that lead into separate rooms and other offshoot corridors, many of them with like different pedestals and whatnot that have items resting upon them. Mercundius looks and he's kind of just like tapping his chin. He's like, "Scrying glass, scrying glass, scrying glass, where would you be?"
I don't suppose it would be catalogued alongside the S's.
You know, that would be intelligent. Though this damnable place has seen so many organizational systems over the years, I doubt anyone's kept it so simple. Why don't we just start with the closest room, right here? And he just walks forward.
Now, Master Mercundius, I do believe I may have some way of helping us expedite the process. I have seen a scrying glass or two in my time. And then Coldfinger will take his cane, tap it on the ground, focus for a moment, and detach himself. And he will simply say, "Locate." And he conjures up the most vivid image of a scrying glass in his mind's eye.
You have a pretty clear mental pathway of where you are in relation to where that glass is. And it would only take you a few minutes going through these different, I guess, exhibit halls to find the glass that you're looking for.
Then Archibald says, "Master Mercundius, I do believe that I have found something. It's back here, if you would like to join me."
"Why, yes, of course. Lead the way."
Archibald goes for a couple of minutes, weaving in and out of various aisles and pedestals and all sorts of containers holding mythical items, until he comes upon a scrying glass.
Well, you come across the room where the scrying glass is, and as you round the bend that would then be blocking the entrance, you're in a new exhibit hall, the hall with the scrying glass just next door. You see a greenish-bluish pulsating light coming from this chamber, and Mercundius grabs your shoulder, gripping it with his feeble fingers, and he says, "That's not normal, my boy."
"Excellent deduction. I agree with you. Perhaps we could draw whatever is in that room out. A couple of, well, honestly, cheap tricks should do it."
"Be my guest."
"Now, let us hide among these objects." And Archibald finds a suitable hiding place behind a bookshelf or something. And he will cast Prestidigitation to create a knocking sound on the door to the room with the scrying glass.
Yeah, just carry out this effect. What happens?
Archibald, from his hiding place, peers around the corner, looks at the door, and very quietly whispers, "Knock." And three solid raps come at the door of the scrying glass room.
As these knocks reverberate off the stone and wood of these exhibit halls, there was sort of this buzzing sound going, kind of like an electrical crackle, and that seems to fade as the light then dims. It's still present in this room, this blue-green hue, this glow, but it's definitely not as intense. And then a second later, a hulking creature walks through the door. It's bipedal, about 8.5 feet tall. Its broad shoulders go into muscled, clawed arms that are covered in a thick carapace, something you've definitely never seen before. It has a strange insectoid head, and whether it's a helmet or not is not immediately clear to you, but as these sort of pincers near its mouth, or where you assume its mouth would be, kind of click and clack in response to it looking around, you quickly come to the deduction, Mr. Coldfinger, that this is not a helmet. This is, in fact, some sort of being. It's wearing a simple robe, akin to maybe something you would see in the Demlik culture. Very shamanistic in nature. Large beads and baubles attached to strings hanging from its neck, around its shoulders and wrists. And its eyes scan the hall that you're in. I don't believe you did any stealth checks or hid, did you?
No, we did hide. I said we found a hiding place.
I'll need you to roll stealth then.
Okay. Coldfinger got himself a 17.
All right, well, Mercundius got a 15. And this creature, on their perception, gets an 18. As it looks around the room, its eyes landing on you, it lets out a shriek. A weird clicking and clacking that assaults your mind in an instant. And then, all of a sudden, the room is gone. And Archibald Coldfinger is standing in a cave, quite alone, as cold, dark water drips down around you.